About civic duty? Right. Feeney pushed his empty plate into the recycler slot, crushed his empty cup with his hand, and sent it to follow. He made a couple of calls, one to East Washington, one to Virginia. Then he makes a local. To the chief. Shit. Yeah. Chief Simpson's pushing buttons for DeBlass, no question. Makes you wonder what buttons. Before Eve could comment, her communicator beeped. She pulled it out and answered the call from her commander. Dallas, be in testing. 20 minutes. Sir, I'm meeting a snitch on the Colby matter at 0900. Reschedule. His voice was flat. 20 minutes. Slowly, Dallas replaced her communicator. I guess we know one of the buttons. Seems like DeBlass has taken a personal interest in you. Feeney studied her face. There wasn't a cop on the force who didn't despise testing. You gonna handle it okay? Yeah, sure. This is gonna tie me up most of the day, Feeney. Do me a favor. Do a run on the banks in Manhattan. I need to know if Sharon DeBlass kept a safe deposit box. If you don't find anything there, spread out to the other boroughs. You got it. The testing section was riddled with long corridors, some glassed, some done in pale green walls that were supposed to be calming. Doctors and technicians wore white, the color of innocence and, of course, power. When she entered the first set of reinforced glass doors, the computer politely ordered her to surrender her weapon. Eve took it out of her holster, set it on the tray, and watched it slide away. It made her feel naked, even before she was directed into testing room 1C and told to strip. She laid her clothes on the bench provided and tried not to think about the techs watching her on their monitors or the machines with their nastily silent glide and their impersonal blinking lights. The physical exam was easy. All she had to do was stand on the center mark in the tube-like room and watch the lights blip and flash as her internal organs and bones were checked for flaws. Then she was permitted to don a blue jumpsuit and sit while a machine angled over to examine her eyes and ears. Another, snicking out from one of the wall slots, did a standard reflex test. For the personal touch, a technician entered to take a blood sample.
Please exit door marked testing 2C. Phase 1 is complete, Dallas, Lieutenant Eve.
In the adjoining room, Eve was instructed to lie on a padded table for the brain scan. Wouldn't want any cops out there with a brain tumor urging them to blast civilians, she thought wearily. Eve watched the techs through the glass wall as the helmet was lowered onto her head. Then the games began. The bench adjusted to a sitting position, and she was treated to virtual reality. The VR put her in a vehicle during a high-speed chase. Sounds exploded in her ears. The scream of sirens, the shouts of conflicting orders from the communicator on the dash. She could see that it was a standard police unit, fully charged. The control of the vehicle was hers, and she had to swerve and maneuver to avoid flattening a variety of pedestrians the VR hurled into her path. In one part of her brain, she was aware her vitals were being monitored. Blood pressure, pulse, even the amount of sweat that crawled on her skin. The saliva that pooled and dried in her mouth. It was hot. Almost unbearably hot. She narrowly missed a food transport that lumbered into her path. She recognized her location. The old ports on the east side. She could smell them. Water, bad fish, and old sweat. Transients wearing their uniform of blue coveralls were looking for a handout or a day's labor. She flew by a group of them jostling for position in front of a placement center.
Subject armed. Rifle torch. Hand explosive. Wanted for robbery homicide.
Great, Eve thought as she careened after him. Fucking great. She punched the accelerator, whipped the wheel, and kissed off the fender of the target vehicle in a shower of sparks. A spurt of flame whooshed by her ear as he fired at her. The proprietor of a portside roach coach dived for cover, along with several of his customers. Rice noodles flew along with curses. She rammed the target again, ordering her backup to maneuver into a pincer position. This time, her quarry's vehicle shuddered, tipped. As he fought for control, she used hers to batter his to a stop. She shouted the standard identification and warning as she bolted from the vehicle. He came out blasting, and she brought him down. The shock from her weapon jolted his nervous system. She watched him jitter, wet himself, then collapse. She'd hardly taken a breath to readjust when the bastard Tex tossed her into a new scene. The screams, the little girl's screams, the raging roar of the man who was her father. They had reconstructed it almost too perfectly, using her own report, visuals of the site, and the mirror of her memory they'd lifted in the scan. She didn't bother to curse them, but held back her hate, her grief, and sent herself racing up the stairs and back into her nightmare. No more screams from the little girl. She beat on the door, calling out her name and rank, warning the man on the other side of the door, trying to calm him.
"Cunts! You're all cunts! Come on in, cunt bitch! I'll kill you!"
The door folded like cardboard under her ramming shoulder. She went in, weapon drawn.
"She was just like her mother. Just like her fucking mother! Thought they'd get away from me. Thought they could. I fixed it. I fixed them. I'm gonna fix you, cunt cop."
The little girl was staring at her with big dead eyes. Doll's eyes. Her tiny, helpless body mutilated. Blood spreading like a pool and dripping from the knife. She told him to freeze.
"You son of a bitch. Drop the weapon. Drop the fucking knife."
But he kept coming. Stunned him. But he kept coming. The room smelled of blood, of urine, of burned food. The lights were too bright, unshaded and blinding so that everything stood out in jarring relief. A doll with a missing arm on the ripped sofa, a crooked window shield that let in a hard red glow from the neon across the street, the overturned table of cheap molded plastic, the cracked screen of a broken link. The little girl with dead eyes. The spreading pool of blood and the sharp, sticky gleam of the blade.
"I'm gonna ram this right up your cunt, just like I did to her!"
Stunned again. His eyes were wild, jagged on homemade Zeus, that wonderful chemical that made gods out of men, with all the power and insanity that went with delusions of immortality. The knife, with the scarlet, drenched blade, hacked down, whistled, and she dropped him. The jolt zipped through his nervous system. His brain died first, so that his body convulsed and shuddered as his eyes turned to glass. Strapping down on the need to scream, she kicked the knife away from his still twitching hand and looked at the child. The big doll's eyes stared at her and told her, again, that she'd been too late. Forcing her body to relax, she let nothing into her mind but her report. The VR section was complete. Her vitals were checked again before she was taken to the final testing phase, the one-to-one with the psychiatrist. Eve didn't have anything against Dr. Mira. The woman was dedicated to her calling. In private practice, she could have earned triple the salary she pulled in under the police and security department. She had a quiet voice with the faintest hint of upper-class New England. Her pale blue eyes were kind and sharp. At 60, she was comfortable with middle age, but far from matronly. Her hair was a warm honey brown and scooped up in the back in a neat yet complicated twist. She wore a tidy rose-toned suit with a sedate gold circle on the lapel. No, Eve had nothing against her personally. She just hated shrinks. "Lieutenant Dallas." Mira rose from a soft blue scoop chair when Eve entered. There was no desk, no computer in sight. One of the tricks, Eve knew, to make the subjects relax and forget they were under intense observation. "Doctor?" Eve sat in the chair Mira indicated.
"I was just about to have some tea. You'll join me?"
"Sure." Mira moved gracefully to the server, ordered two teas, then brought the cups to the sitting area.
"It's unfortunate that your testing was postponed, Lieutenant."
With a smile, she sat, sipped.
"The process is more conclusive and certainly more beneficial when run within 24 hours of an incident." It couldn't be helped.
So I'm told. Your preliminary results are satisfactory.
Fine.
You still refuse auto-hypnosis?
It's optional. Hating the defensive sound of her voice.
Yes, it is.
Mira crossed her legs.
You've been through a difficult experience, Lieutenant. There are signs of physical and emotional fatigue.
I'm on another case, a demanding one. It's taking a lot of my time.
Yes, I have that information. Are you taking the standard sleep inducers?
Eve tested the tea. It was, as she'd suspected, floral in scent and flavor. No, we've been through that before. Night pills are optional and I opt no.
Because they limit your control.
Eve met her eyes. That's right. I don't like being put to sleep and I don't like being here. I don't like brain rape.
You consider testing a kind of rape?
There wasn't a cop with a brain who didn't. It's not a choice, is it? Mira kept her sigh to herself.
The termination of a subject, no matter the circumstances, is a traumatic experience for a police officer. If the trauma affects the emotions, the reactions, the attitude, the officer's performance will suffer. If the use of full force was caused by a physical defect, that defect must be located and repaired.
I know the company line, Doctor. I'm cooperating fully, but I don't have to like it.
No, you don't.
Mira neatly balanced the cup on her knee.
Lieutenant, this is your second termination. Though that is not an unusual amount for an officer with your length of duty, there are many who never need to make that decision. I'd like to know how you feel about the choice you made and the results.
I wish I'd been quicker, Eve thought. I wish that child was playing with her toys right now instead of being cremated. As my only choice was to let him carve me into pieces or stop him, I feel just fine about the decision. My warning was issued and ignored. Stunning was ineffective. The evidence that he would indeed kill was lying on the floor between us in a puddle of blood. Therefore, I have no problem with the results.
You were disturbed by the death of the child?
I believe anyone would be disturbed by the death of a child. Certainly that kind of vicious murder of the defenseless.
And do you see the parallel between the child and yourself?
Mira asked quietly. She could see Eve draw in and close off.
Lieutenant, we both know I'm fully aware of your background. You were abused physically, sexually, and emotionally. You were abandoned when you were 8.
That has nothing to do with...
I think it may have a great deal to do with your mental and emotional state, Mira interrupted. For 2 years between the ages of 8 and 10, you lived in a communal home while your parents were searched for. You have no memory of the first 8 years of your life, your name, your circumstances, your birthplace.
However mild they were, Mira's eyes were sharp and searching.
You were given the name Eve Dallas, and eventually placed in foster care. You had no control over any of this. You were a battered child, dependent on the system which in many ways failed you.
It took every ounce of will for Eve to keep her eyes and her voice level. As I, part of the system, failed to protect the child. You want to know how I feel about that, Dr. Mira?
Wretched, sick, sorry, she thought.
I feel that I did everything I could do. I went through your VR and did it again, because there was no changing it. If I could have saved the child, I would have saved her. If I could have arrested the subject, I would have.
But these matters were not in your control.
Sneaky bitch, Eve thought. It was in my control to terminate. After employing all standard options, I exercised my control. You've reviewed the report. It was a clean, justifiable termination.
Mira said nothing for a moment.
Her skills, she knew, had never been able to more than scrape at Eve's outer wall of defense.
Very well, Lieutenant. You're cleared to resume duty without restriction.
Mira held up a hand before Eve could rise.
Off the record.
Is anything?
Mira only smiled. It's true that very often the mind protects itself. Yours refuses to acknowledge the first 8 years of your life.
but those years are a part of you. I can get them back for you when you're ready. And Eve, she added in that quiet voice, I can help you deal with them. I've made myself what I am, and I can live with it. Maybe I don't want to risk living with the rest. She got up and walked to the door. When she turned back, Mira was sitting just as she had been, legs crossed, one hand holding the pretty little cup. The scent of brewed flowers lingered in the air. A hypothetical case, Eve began, and waited for Mira's nod. A woman, with considerable social and financial advantages, chooses to become a whore. At Mira's lifted brow, Eve swore impatiently. We don't have to pretty up the terminology here, Doctor. She chose to make her living from sex. Flaunted it in front of her well-positioned family, including her arch-conservative grandfather. Why? It's difficult to come up with one specific motive from such general and sketchy information. The most obvious would be the subject could find her self-worth only in sexual skill. She either enjoyed or detested the act. Intrigued, Eve stepped away from the door. If she detested it, why would she become a pro? To punish. Herself? Certainly. And those close to her. To punish, Eve mused. The diary. Blackmail. A man kills, Eve continued, viciously, brutally. The killing is tied to sex and is executed in a unique and distinctive fashion. He records it, has bypassed a sophisticated security system. A recording of the murder is delivered to the investigating officer. A message is left at the scene, a boastful message. What is he? You don't give me much, Mira complained, but Eve could see her attention was caught. Inventive, she began. A planner and a voyeur. Confident, perhaps smug. You said distinctive, so he wishes to leave his mark, and he wants to show off his skill, his brain. Using your observation and deductive talents, Lieutenant, did he enjoy the act of murder? Yes, I think he reveled in it. Mira nodded. Then he will certainly enjoy it again. He already has. Two murders, barely a week apart. He won't wait long before the next, will he? It's doubtful. Mira sipped her tea as if they were discussing the latest spring fashions. Are the two murders connected in any way, other than the perpetrator and the method? Sex, Eve said shortly. Ah. Mira tilted her head. With all our technology, with the amazing advances that have been made in genetics, we are still unable to control human virtues and flaws. Perhaps we are too human to permit the tampering. Passions are necessary to the human spirit. We learned that early this century, when genetic engineering nearly slipped out of control. It's unfortunate that some passions twist. Sex and violence. For some, it's still a natural marriage. She stood then, to take the cups and place them beside the server. I'd be interested in knowing more about this man, Lieutenant. If and when you decide you want a profile, I hope you'll come to me. It's code 5. Mira glanced back. I see. If we don't tie this thing up before he hits again, I may be able to swing it. I'll make myself available. Thanks. Eve, even strong, self-made women have weak spots. Don't be afraid of them. Eve held Mira's gaze for another moment. I've got work to do. Testing left her shaky. Eve compensated by being surly and antagonistic with her snitch and nearly losing a lead on a case involving bootlegged chemicals. Her mood was far from cheerful when she checked back in to Cop Central. There was no message from Feeney. Others in her department knew just where she'd spent the day and did their best to stay out of her way. As a result, she worked in solitude and annoyance for an hour. Her last effort was to put through a call to Rourke. She was neither surprised nor particularly disappointed when he wasn't available. She left a message on his email requesting an appointment, then logged out for the day. She intended to drown her mood in cheap liquor and mediocre music and Mavis's latest gig at the Blue Squirrel. It was a joint, which put it one slippery step up from a dive. The light was dim, the clientele edgy, and the service pitiful. It was exactly what Eve was looking for. The music struck her in one clashing wave when she walked in. Mavis was managing to lift her appealing screech of a voice over the band, which consisted of one multi-tattooed kid on a melody master. Eve snarled off the offer from a guy in a hooded jacket to buy her a drink in one of the private smoking booths. She jockeyed her way to a table, pressed in an order for a screamer, and settled back to watch Mavis perform. She wasn't half bad, Eve decided. Not half good, either, but the customers weren't choosy. Mavis was wearing paint tonight, her busty little body a canvas for splatters and streaks of orange and violet, with strategically brushed splotches of emerald. Bracelets and chains jangled as she jittered around the small raised stage. One step below, a mass of humanity gyrated in sympathy. Eve watched a small sealed package pass from hand to hand on the edge of the dance floor. Drugs, of course. They'd tried a war on them, legalizing them, ignoring them, and regulating them. Nothing seemed to work. She couldn't raise the interest to make a bust, and lifted a hand in a wave to Mavis instead. The vocal part of the song ended, such as it was. Mavis leaped off stage, wiggled through the crowd, and plopped a painted hip on the edge of Eve's table. "Hey, stranger!" "Looking good, Mavis." "Who's the artist?" "Oh, this guy I know." She shifted, tapped an inch-long fingernail on the left cheek of her butt. "Caruso! See, he signed me! Got the job free for passing his name around." Her eyes rounded when the waitress set the long, slim glass filled with frothy blue liquid in front of Eve. "A screamer? Wouldn't you rather I find a hammer and just knock you unconscious?" "It's been a shitty day," Eve muttered, and took the first shocking sip. "Jesus! These never get any better." Worried, Mavis leaned closer. "I can cut out for a little while." "No, I'm okay." Eve risked her life with another sip. "I just wanted to check out your gig. Let off some steam." "Mavis, you're not using, are you?" "Hey, come on!" More concerned than insulted, Mavis shook Eve's shoulder. "I'm clean, you know that. Some shit gets passed around in here, but it's all minor league. Some happy pills, some calmers, a few mood patches." She pokered up. "If you're looking to make a bust, you could at least do it on my night off." "Sorry." Annoyed with herself, Eve rubbed her hands over her face. "I'm not fit for human consumption at the moment. Go back and sing. I like hearing you." "Sure. But if you want company when you split, just give me a sign. I can fix it." "Thanks." Eve sat back, closed her eyes. It was a surprise when the music slowed, even mellowed. If you didn't look around, it wasn't so bad. For 20 credits, she could have hooked on mood enhancer goggles, treated herself to lights and shapes that fit the music. At the moment, she preferred the dark behind her eyes. "This doesn't seem quite your den of iniquity, Lieutenant." Eve opened her eyes and stared up at Rourke. "Every time I turn around." He sat across from her. The table was small enough that their knees bumped. His way of adjusting was to slide his thighs against hers. "You called me, remember? And you'd left this address when you logged out." "I wanted an appointment, not a drinking buddy." He glanced at the drink on the table, leaned over to take a sniff. "You're not going to get one with that poison." "This joint doesn't run to fine wine and aged scotch." He laid a hand over hers for the simple purpose of watching her scowl and jerk away. "Why don't we go somewhere that does?" "I'm in a pisser of a mood, Rourke. Give me an appointment at your convenience, then take off." "An appointment for what?" The singer caught his attention. He cocked a brow, watching her roll her eyes and gesture. "Unless she's having some sort of seizure, I believe the vocalist is signaling you." Resigned, Eve glanced over, shook her head. "She's a friend of mine. She shook her head more emphatically when Mavis grinned and turned both thumbs up. She thinks I got lucky.
You did.
Rourke picked the drink up and set it on an adjoining table where greedy hands fought over it. I just saved your life. God damn it! If you want to get drunk, Eve, at least do it with something that will leave you with most of your stomach lining.
He scanned the menu, winced. Which means nothing that can be purchased here.
He took her hand as he rose. Come on.
I'm fine right here.
All patience, he bent down until his face was close to hers.
What you are is hoping to get drunk enough so that you can take a few punches at someone without worrying about the consequences. With me, you don't have to get drunk. You don't have to worry. You can take all the punches you want.
Why?
Because you have something sad in your eyes, and it gets to me.
While she was dealing with the surprise of that statement, he hauled her to her feet and toward the door.
I'm going home, she decided.
No, you're not.
Listen, pal.
That was as far as she got, before her back was shoved against the wall and his mouth crushed hard on hers. She didn't fight. The wind had been knocked out of her by the suddenness and the rage under it, and the shock of need that slammed into her like a fist.
It was quick, seconds only, before her mouth was free.
Stop it, she demanded,
and hated that her voice was only a shaky whisper.
Whatever you think, he began, struggling for his own composure, there are times when you need someone. Right now, it's me.
Impatience shimmering around him, he pulled her outside.
Where's your car?
She gestured down the block and let him propel her down the sidewalk.
I don't know what your problem is.
It seems to be you.
Do you know how you looked?
He demanded as he yanked open the car door.
Sitting in that place, with your eyes closed, shadows under them.
Picturing it again only fired his anger. He shoved her into the passenger seat and rounded the car to take the driver's position himself.
What's your fucking code?
Fascinated with the whiplash temper, she shifted to key it in herself. With the lock released, he pressed the starter and pulled away from the curb.
I was trying to relax, Eve said carefully.
You don't know how, he shot back.
You've packed it in, but you haven't gotten rid of it. You're walking a real straight line, Eve, but it's a damn thin one.
That's what I'm trained to do. You don't know what you're up against this time.
Her fingers curled into a fist at her side.
And you do.
He was silent for a moment, banking his own emotions.
We'll talk about it later.
I like now better. I went to see Elizabeth Barrister yesterday.
I know.
Calmer, he adjusted to the jerky rhythm of her car.
You're cold. Turn up the heater.
It's busted.
Why didn't you tell me that she'd asked you to meet Sharon, to talk to her?
Because Beth asked me in confidence.
What's your relationship with Elizabeth Barrister?
We're friends.
Rourke slanted her a look.
I have a few. She and Richard are among them.
And the senator?
I hate his fucking pompous, hypocritical guts, Rourke said calmly. If he gets his party's nomination for president, I'll put everything I've got into his opponent's campaign. If it's the devil himself.
You should learn to speak your mind, Rourke, she said with a ghost of a smile.
Did you know that Sharon kept a diary?
It's a natural assumption.
She was a businesswoman. I'm not talking about a log, business records. A diary, a personal diary.
Secrets, Rourke.
Blackmail.
He said nothing as he turned the idea over.
Well, well.
You found your motive.
That remains to be seen.
You have a lot of secrets, Rourke.
He let out a half laugh as he stopped at the gates of his estate.
Do you really think I'd be a victim of blackmail, Eve? That some lost, pitiful woman like Sharon could unearth information you can't and use it against me?
No.
That was simple, she thought.
She put a hand on his arm.
I'm not going inside with you.
That was not.
If I were bringing you here for sex, we'd have sex. We both know it. You wanted to see me.
You want to shoot the kind of weapon that was used to kill Sharon and the other, don't you?
She let out a short breath.
Yes.
Now's your chance.
The gates opened. He drove through. Chapter 10. The same stone-faced butler stood guard at the door. He took Eve's coat with the same faint disapproval. "Send coffee down to the target room, please," Rourke ordered as he led Eve up the stairs. He was holding her hand again, but Eve decided it was less a sentimental gesture than one to make sure she didn't balk. She could have told him that she was much too intrigued to go anywhere, but found she enjoyed that ripple of annoyance under his smooth manner. When they'd reached the third floor, he went through his collection briskly, choosing weapons without fuss or hesitation. He handled the antiques with the competence of experience and, she thought, habitual use. Not a man who simply bought to own, but one who made use of his possessions. She wondered if he knew that counted against him, or if he cared. Once his choices were secured in a leather case, he moved to a wall. Both the security console and the door itself were so cleverly hidden in a painting of a forest, she would never have found it. The trompe l'oeil slid open to an elevator. "This car only opens to a select number of rooms," he explained as Eve stepped into the elevator with him. "I rarely take guests down to the target area." "Why?" "My collection, and the use of it, are reserved for those who can appreciate it." "How much do you buy through the black market?"
"Always a cop."
He flashed that grin at her, and she was sure tucked his tongue in his cheek. "I buy only through legal sources, naturally." His eyes skimmed down to her shoulder bag. "As long as you've got your recorder on." She couldn't help but smile back. Of course she had a recorder on, and of course he knew it. It was a measure of her interest that she opened the bag, took out her recorder, and manually disengaged.
"And you're back up," he said smoothly.
"You're too smart for your own good." Willing to take the chance, she slipped a hand into her pocket. The backup unit was nearly paper thin. She used a thumbnail to deactivate it. "What about yours?" She glanced around the elevator as the doors opened. "You'd have video and audio security in every corner of this place."
"Of course."
He took her hand again and drew her out of the car. The room was high-ceilinged, surprisingly spartan given Rourke's love of comfort. The lights switched on the moment they stepped in, illuminating plain, sand-colored walls, a bank of simple high-backed chairs, and tables where a tray holding a silver coffee pot and china cups had already been set. Ignoring them, Eve walked over to a long, glossy black console. "What does it do?"
"A number of things."
Rourke set the case he carried down on a flat area. He pressed his palm to an identiscreen. There was a soft green glow beneath it as his print was read and accepted, then lights and dials glowed on. "I keep a supply of ammunition here." He pressed a series of buttons. A cabinet in the base of the console slid open. "You'll want these." From a second cabinet, he took earplugs and safety glasses. "This is what, like a hobby?" Eve asked as she adjusted the glasses. The small, clear lenses cupped her eyes. The attached earplugs fit snugly.
"Yes, like a hobby."
His voice came with a faint echo through her ear protectors, linking them, closing out the rest. He chose the .38, loaded it. "This was standard police issue in the mid-20th century. Toward the second millennium, 9mm were preferred. The RS-50s were the official weapon of choice during the urban revolt and into the third decade of the 21st century. He lifted a brow, pleased.
"You've been doing your homework."
"Damn right." She glanced at the weapon in his hand. "Into the mind of a killer." "Then you'd be aware that the hand laser you have strapped to your side didn't gain popular acceptance until about 25 years ago. She watched with a slight frown as he slapped the cylinder shut. "The NS laser, with modifications, has been standard police issue since 2023. I didn't notice any lasers in your collection." His eyes met hers, and there was a laugh in them. "Cop toys only. They're illegal, Lieutenant, even for collectors." He pressed a button.
Against the far wall, a hologram flashed, so lifelike that Eve blinked and braced before she caught herself.
"Excellent image," she murmured, studying the big, bull-shouldered man holding a weapon she couldn't quite identify.
"He's a replica of a typical 20th-century thug. That's an AK-47 he's holding."
"Right."
She narrowed her eyes at it. It was more dramatic than in the photos and videos she'd studied. Very popular with urban gangs and drug dealers of the era.
"An assault weapon," Rourke murmured. "Fashioned to kill. Once I activate, if he hits target, you'd feel a slight jolt. Low-level electrical shock, rather than the much more dramatic insult of a bullet."
"Want to try it?"
"You go first."
"Fine."
Rourke activated. The hologram lunged forward, swinging up his weapon. The sound effects kicked in instantly. The thunder of noise had Eve jerking back a step. Snarled obscenities, street sounds, the terrifyingly rapid explosion of gunfire. She watched, slack-jawed, as the image spurted what looked entirely too much like blood. The wide chest seemed to erupt with it as the man flew back. The weapon spiraled out of his hand. Then both vanished.
Jesus.
A little surprised that he'd been showing off like a kid at an arcade, Rourke lowered his weapon. "It hardly makes the point of what something like this can do to flesh and bone if the image isn't realistic."
"Guess not."
She had to swallow.
"Did he hit you?"
"Not that time. Of course, one-on-one, and when you can fully anticipate your opponent, doesn't make it very difficult to win your round."
Rourke pushed more buttons, and the dead gunman was back, whole and ready to rock.
Rourke took his stance with the ease and automation Eve thought of a veteran cop, or, to borrow his word, a thug. Abruptly, the image lunged, and as Rourke fired, other holograms appeared in rapid succession. A man with some sort of wicked-looking handgun, a snarling woman aiming a long-barreled weapon, a .44 Magnum, Eve decided, a small, terrified child carrying a ball. They flashed and fired, cursed, screamed, bled. When it was over, the child was sitting on the ground, weeping, all alone.
"A random choice like that's more difficult," Rourke told her. "Caught my shoulder."
"What?" Eve blinked, focused on him again.
"Your shoulder."
He grinned at her.
"Don't worry, darling, it's just a flesh wound."
Her heart was thudding in her ears, no matter how ridiculous, she told herself, was her reaction.
"Hell of a toy, Rourke. Real fun and games time."
"Do you play often?"
"Now and again."
"Ready to try it?" If she could handle a session with VR, Eve decided, she could handle this.
"Yeah.
Run another random pattern."
"That's what I admire about you, Lieutenant."
Rourke selected ammo, loaded fresh. "You jump right in."
"Let's try a dry run first."
He brought up a simple target, circles and a bullseye. He stepped behind her, putting the .38 in her hands, his over them. He pressed his cheek to hers.
"You have to sight it, as it doesn't sense heat and movement as your weapon does."
He adjusted her arms until he was satisfied. "When you're ready to fire, you want to squeeze the trigger, not pump it. It's going to jerk a bit. It's not as smooth or as silent as your laser."
"I've got that," she muttered.
It was foolish to be susceptible to his hands over hers, the press of his body, the smell of him. "You're crowding me."
He turned his head, just enough to have his lips brushing up to her earlobe. It was innocently unpierced, rather sweet, like a child's.
"I know."
"You need to brace yourself more than you're used to. Your reaction will be to flinch. Don't."
"I don't flinch." To prove it, she squeezed the trigger. Her arms jerked, annoying her. She shot again, and the third time, missing the heart of the target by less than an inch.
"Christ, you feel it, don't you?"
She rolled her shoulders, fascinated by the way they sang in response to the weapon in her hands.
"It makes it more personal."
"You've got a good eye."
He was impressed, but his tone was mild.
"Of course it's one thing to shoot at a circle, another to shoot at a body. Even a reproduction. A challenge, she noted. Well, she was up for it. How many more shots in this? We'll reload it full. He programmed in a series. Curiosity, and he had to admit, ego had him choosing a tough one. Ready? She flicked a glance at him, adjusted her stance. Yeah. The first image was an elderly woman, clutching a shopping bag with both hands. Eve nearly took the bystander's head off before her finger froze. A movement flickered to the left, and she shot a mugger before he could bring an iron pipe down on the old woman. A slight sting in her left hip had her shifting again and taking out a bald man with a weapon similar to her own. They came fast and hard after that. Rourke watched her, mesmerized. No, she didn't flinch, he mused. Her eyes stayed flat and cool. Cop's eyes. He knew her adrenaline was up, her pulse hammering. Her movements were quick, but as smooth and studied as a dance. Her jaw was set, her hands steady. And he wanted her, he realized as his gut churned. Quite desperately, he wanted her. Caught me twice, she said almost to herself. She opened the chamber herself, reloaded as she'd seen Rourke do. Once in the hip, once in the abdomen. That makes me dead or in dire straits. Run another. He obliged her, then tucked his hands in his pockets and watched her work. When she was done, she asked to try the Swiss model. She found she preferred the weight and the response of it. Definitely an advantage over a revolver, she reflected. Quicker, more responsive, better firepower, and a reload took seconds. Neither weapon fit as comfortably in her hand as her laser, yet she found both primitively and horribly efficient. And the damage they caused, the torn flesh, the flying blood, turned death into a gruesome affair. Any hits? Rourke asked. Though the images were gone, she stared at the wall and the after-images that played in her mind. No, I'm clean. What they do to a body, she said softly, and put the weapon down. To have used these. To have faced having to use them day after day, and know going in they could be used against you. Who could face that, she wondered, without going a little insane? You could. He removed his eye and ear protectors. Conscience and dedication to duty don't have to equal any kind of weakness. You got through testing. It cost you, but you got through it. Carefully, she set her protectors beside his. How do you know? How do I know you were in testing today? I have contacts. How do I know it cost you? He cupped her chin. I can see it, he said softly. Your heart wars with your head. I don't think you realize that's what makes you so good at your job. Or so fascinating to me. I'm not trying to fascinate you. I'm trying to find a man who used those weapons I just fired, not for defense, but for pleasure. She looked straight into his eyes. It isn't you. No, it isn't me. But you know something. He brushed the pad of his thumb over into the dip in her chin before dropping his hand. I'm not at all sure that I do. He crossed over to the table, poured coffee. 20th-century weapons, 20th-century crimes, with 20th-century motives? He flicked a glance at her. That would be my take. It's a simple enough deduction. But tell me, Lieutenant, can you play deductive games in history, or are you too firmly entrenched in the now? She'd wondered the same herself, and she was learning. I'm flexible. No, but you're smart. Whoever killed Sharon had a knowledge, even an affection, perhaps an obsession with the past. His brow lifted mockingly. I do have a knowledge of certain pieces of the past, and undoubtedly an affection for them. Obsession? He lifted a careless shoulder. You'd have to judge for yourself. I'm working on it. I'm sure you are. Let's take a page out of old-fashioned deductive reasoning. No computers, no technical analysis. Study the victim first. You believe Sharon was a blackmailer, and it fits.
She was an angry woman, a defiant one who needed power, and wanted to be loved. You figured all that out after seeing her twice? From that? He offered the coffee to her. And from talking to people who knew her. Friends and associates found her a stunning, energetic woman, yet a secretive one. A woman who dismissed her family, yet thought of them often. One who loved to live, yet one who brooded regularly. I imagine we've covered much of the same ground. Irritation jumped in. I wasn't aware you were covering any ground, Rourke, in a police investigation. Beth and Richard are my friends. I take my friendship seriously. They're grieving, Eve, and I don't like knowing Beth is blaming herself. She remembered the haunted eyes and nerves. She sighed. All right, I can accept that. Who have you talked to? Friends, as I said, acquaintances, business associates. He set his coffee aside as Eve sipped hers and paced. Odd, isn't it, how many different opinions and perceptions you find on one woman? Ask this one, and you'll hear Sharon was loyal, generous. Ask another, and she was vindictive, calculating. Still another saw her as a party addict who could never find enough excitement, while the next tells you she enjoyed quiet evenings on her own. Quite a role player, our Sharon. She wore different faces for different people. It's common enough. Which face or which role killed her? Rourke took out a cigarette, lighted it. Blackmail. Thoughtfully, he blew out a fragrant stream of smoke. She would have to be good at it. She liked to dig into people, and could dispense considerable charm while doing it. And she dispensed it on you. Lavishly. That careless smile flashed again. I wasn't prepared to exchange information for sex. Even if she hadn't been my friend's daughter and a professional, she wouldn't have appealed to me in that way. I prefer a different type. His eyes rested on Eve's again, broodingly. Or thought I did. I haven't yet figured out why the intense, driven, and prickly type appeals to me so unexpectedly. She poured more coffee, looked at him over the rim. That isn't flattering. It wasn't meant to be. Though for someone who must have a very poor-sighted hairdresser and doesn't choose the standard enhancements, you are surprisingly easy to look at. I don't have a hairdresser or time for enhancements. Or she decided the inclination to discuss them, to continue the deduction. If Sharon de Blas was murdered by one of her blackmail victims, where does Lola Starr come in? A problem, isn't it? Rourke took a contemplative drag. They don't appear to have anything in common other than their choice of profession. It's doubtful they knew each other or shared the same taste in clients, yet there was one who, at least briefly, knew them both. One who chose them both. Rourke lifted a brow, nodded. You put it better. What did you mean when you said I didn't know what I was getting into? His hesitation was so brief, so smoothly covered, it was barely noticeable. I'm not sure if you understand the power de Blas has or can use. The scandal of his granddaughter's murder could add to it. He wants the presidency, and he wants to dictate the mood and moral choices of the country and beyond. You're saying he could use Sharon's death politically? How? Rourke stubbed his cigarette out. He could paint his granddaughter as a victim of society, with sex for profit as the murder weapon. How can a world that allows legalized prostitution, full conception control, sexual adjustment, and so forth, not take responsibility for the results? Eve could appreciate the debate, but shook her head. De Blas also wants to eliminate the gun ban. She was shot by a weapon not really available under current law, which makes it more insidious. Would she have been able to defend herself if she, too, had been armed? When Eve started to disagree, he shook his head. It hardly matters what the answer is, only the question itself. Have we forgotten our founders and the basic tenets of their blueprint for the country? Our right to bear arms. A woman murdered in her own home, her own bed, a victim of sexual freedom and defenselessness. More, yes, much more of moral decline. He strolled over to disengage the console. Oh, you'll argue that murder by handgun was the rule rather than the exception when anyone with a desire and the finances could purchase one. But he'll drown that out. The Conservative Party is gaining ground, and he's the spearhead. He watched her assimilate as she poured yet more coffee. Has it occurred to you that he might not want the murderer caught? Off guard, she looked up. Why wouldn't he? Over and above the personal, wouldn't that give him even more ammunition? Here's the low-life, immoral scum that murdered my poor, misguided granddaughter. That's a risk, isn't it? Perhaps the murderer is a fine, upstanding pillar of his community who was equally misguided, but a scapegoat is certainly required. He waited a moment, watching her think it through. Who do you think made certain you went to testing in the middle of this case? Who's watching every step you take, monitoring every stage of your investigation? Who's digging into your background, your personal life as well as your professional one? Shaken, she set her cup down. I suspect de Blas put the pressure on about testing. He doesn't trust me, or he hasn't decided I'm competent to head the investigation. And he had Feeney and me followed from East Washington. She let out a long breath. How do you know he's digging on me? Because you are? He didn't mind the anger in her eyes or the accusation. He preferred it to the worry another might have shown. No, because I'm watching him while he's watching you. I decided I'd find it more satisfying to learn about you from the source over time than by reading reports. He stepped closer, skimmed his fingers over her choppy hair. I respect the privacy of the people I care about. And I care about you, Eve. I don't know why, precisely. But you pull something from me. When she started to step back, he tightened his fingers. I'm tired of every time I have a moment with you, you put murder between us. There is murder between us. No. If anything, that's what brought us here. Is that the problem? You can't shed Lieutenant Dallas long enough to feel? That's who I am. Then that's who I want. His eyes had darkened with impatient desire. The frustration he felt was only with himself, for being so impossibly driven he might at any moment beg. Lieutenant Dallas wouldn't be afraid of me, even if Eve might. The coffee had wired her. That's what had her system so jittery with nerves. I'm not afraid of you, Rourke. Aren't you? He moved closer, curling his hands on the lapels of her shirt. What do you think will happen if you step over the line? Too much, she murmured. Not enough. Sex isn't high on my priority list. It's distracting. The temper in his eyes lighted to a laugh. Damn right it is. When it's done well. Isn't it time you let me show you? She gripped his arms, not sure if she intended to move in or away. It's a mistake. So we'll have to make it count, he muttered, before his mouth captured hers. She moved in. Her arms went around him, fingers diving into his hair. Her body slammed into his, vibrating as the kiss grew rough, then nearly brutal. His mouth was hot, almost vicious. The shock of it sent flares of reaction straight to her center. Already, his fast, impatient hands were tugging her shirt from her jeans, finding her skin. In response, she dragged at his, desperate to get through silk and to flesh. He had a vision of himself dragging her to the floor, pounding himself into her until her screams echoed like gunshots and his release erupted like blood. It would be quick and fierce and over. With the breath shuddering in his lungs, he jerked back. Her face was flushed, her mouth already swollen. He tore her shirt at the shoulder. A room filled with violence, the smell of gun smoke still stinking the air, and weapons still within reach. Not here. He half carried, half dragged her to the elevator. By the time the doors opened, he'd ripped aside the torn sleeve. He shoved her against the back wall as the doors closed them in and fumbled with her holster.
Take this damn thing off! Take it off!
She hit the release and let the holster dangle from one hand as she fought open his buttons with the other.
Why do you wear so many clothes?
I won't next time. He ripped the tattered shirt aside. Beneath, she wore a thin, nearly transparent undershirt that revealed small, firm breasts and hardened nipples. He closed his hands over them, watched her eyes glaze.
Where do you like to be touched?
You're doing fine. She had to brace a hand on the wall to keep from buckling. When the doors opened again, they were fused together. They circled out with his teeth nipping and scraping along her throat. She let her bag and her holster drop. She got a glimpse of the room. Wide windows, mirrors, muted colors. She could smell flowers and felt the give of carpet under her feet. As she struggled to release his slacks, she caught sight of the bed. Holy God! It was huge. A lake of midnight blue cupped between high carved wood. It stood on a platform beneath a domed sky window. Across from it was a fireplace of pale green stone where fragrant wood sizzled.
You sleep here?
I don't intend to sleep tonight. He interrupted her gawking by pulling her up the two stairs to the platform and tumbling her onto the bed. I have to check in by 0700.
Shut up, Lieutenant.
Okay. With a half laugh, she rolled on top of him and fastened her mouth to his. Wild, reckless energy was bursting inside her. She couldn't move quickly enough. Her hands weren't fast enough to satisfy the craving. She fought off her boots, let him peel the jeans over her hips. A wave of pleasure rippled through her when she heard him groan. It had been a long time since she'd felt the tension and heat of a man's body. A very long time since she'd wanted to. The need for release was driving and fierce. The moment they were naked, she would have straddled him and satisfied it. But he flipped their positions, muffled her edgy protests with a long, rough kiss.
"What's your hurry?" he murmured, sliding a hand down to take her breast and watching her face while his thumb quietly tortured her nipple.
"I haven't even looked at you."
"I want you."
"I know." He levered back, running a hand from her shoulder to her thigh while his gaze followed the movement. The blood was pounding in his loins.
Long, slim,
his hand squeezed lightly on her breast.
Small, very nearly delicate. Who would have guessed?
"I want you inside me."
"You only want one aspect inside you," he murmured.
"God damn it," she began, then groaned when he dipped his head and took her breast into his mouth. She writhed against him, against herself as he suckled, so gently at first it was torture. Then harder, faster, until she had to bite back a scream. His hands continued to skim over her, kindling exotic little fires of need. It wasn't what she was used to. Sex, when she chose to have it, was quick, simple, and satisfied a basic need. But this was tangling emotions, a war on the system, a battering of the senses. She struggled to get a hand between them, to reach him where he lay hard and heavy against her. Pure panic set in when he braceleted her wrists and levered her hands over her head.
"Don't."
He'd nearly released her in reflex before he saw her eyes. Panic, yes, even fear, but desire, too.
"You can't always be in control, Eve."
As he spoke, he ran his free hand over her thigh. She trembled, and her eyes unfocused when his fingers brushed the back of her knee.
"Don't," she said again, fighting for air.
"Don't what?
Find a weakness? Exploit it?"
Experimentally, he caressed that sensitive skin, tracing his fingers up toward the heat, then back again. Her breath was coming in pants now as she fought to roll away from him.
"Too late, it seems," he murmured.
You want the kick without the intimacy? He began a trail of slow, open-mouthed kisses at the base of her throat, working his way down while her body shivered like a plucked wild.